the Football League podcast, one episode away from a century. Coming up, Millwall get their arse out. Blimey. We'll ask how QPR have turned things around, ponder who'll come out on top in a scrap between Swans and Black Cats, and more besides. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And it's nearly Christmas, isn't it? And as I say, we're one episode away from 100. This is number 99, but we haven't got any problems, or I haven't at least, because I have got Adrian Clarke and Sam Parkin alongside me. Adrian, how are you?
I'm all right. I've come to back of 5 games in 5 days. So I'm a little bit beasted, but I've enjoyed it. I mean, it's great, isn't it? Going to football matches. Love it.
Yeah, certainly beats real work, even if it is tiring. Sam, you okay?
Very well, mate. Yeah, looking forward to my first, not mine, but my first of my nativity plays put on by one of my my lads, about an hour away from kickoff.
Excellent.
What's his role?
He's a shepherd.
It's decent. It's strong.
I can only recall ever being in like an alternative Christmas play. We had like quite a eccentric head teacher at my primary school. I was a bear. I didn't have any lines.
I would have thought you'd have been scenery, you know, lugging stuff around at the back.
Definitely. I would have preferred that. My mum would have preferred that. I remember the outfit. I don't remember doing a great deal.
Yeah, my son got upgraded this year from donkey to king. So nice to see some progression within the system.
Progress.
The more experience you get. Right, before we get into it, let me remind you that our partners at Quinbet have a new offer for you. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet worth up to £35, minimum 3 bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. 18 plus, new UK customers only. Gamblerware.org is the place to go for all your gambling responsibly information. All right, we're going to start today with some managerial movement at Millwall. Well, this is a weird one. Neil Harris will take charge of Millwall for the final time of his latest spell, but let's be honest, probably not his final spell ever, when the Lions go to Middlesbrough on Saturday. He's decided the jig is up, saying, "I always said when I returned that I would leave when I felt the time is right, and now is that time." Millwall were just a point above the relegation zone when he took over in February. They finished 13th. They've won 6 of 19 so far. They were beaten by Coventry on Saturday. That their first loss in 10 games. Followed that up with a 1-0 loss against Sheffield United on Wednesday. Against Coventry, they didn't manage a single shot on target, and Harris said after the game, "Just a reminder to people, the thickos, that when you take the three best players out of the team, that this is Millwall Football Club." Sam, you know the man, you know the club. What's going on here?
Really surprised. Yeah, really surprised when I saw the news, because I've obviously seen them live on a couple of occasions this season and thought they've actually been really good. Thought they've had a terrific start to the season. Obviously, the last few games hasn't been brilliant, and yeah, it's never wise to come out and criticise the punters. That's clear as day, and I'm sure he'll regret, obviously, the way he said it, albeit I completely agree with what he was saying in terms of the three players that were missing and the reality of a situation at Millwall when you're playing against teams with deeper squads, better budgets, so on and so forth. So I understood what he was saying, of course, that he could not understand the negativity, but on reflection, of course, you can't speak about the supporters like that. But I think it runs deeper. I think there's probably quite a lot that's gone into this decision. I think his manner in the summer and the early part of the season, if you put the results and the promising start to the season to one side, he didn't seem overly happy with the recruitment. I think probably what was going on above pitch level. Obviously, it's been rejigged there with Steve Gallen in charge of football matters, or whatever his title is. And I remember that comment when they brought in the young lad as well from Ivanovic, and Neil Harris seemed to allude to the fact that he didn't maybe know too much about that deal. So I don't think everything's been particularly rosy. And when you throw in that it was only really a temporary fix, I think, and that was probably the agreement, it gathered momentum because of how they performed at the back end of last season, and Neil was obviously given this season. But I don't think probably in his mind it was looking at something long term. So sad. Great that he got that reception last night. They looked more competitive in that game, obviously, with Tanganga and SA back for two. Again, you know, he's the greatest goal scorer in that club's history, arguably the greatest ever player. They should cherish the memories if this is to be the last time he's in the dugout, because I've got a lot of time for him and he's been amazing for that club. Where they go now, they went Joe Edwards, didn't they? And it didn't work over a really brief period. Is there big plans to kind of reinvent the wheel at Millwall? We know that can be a really tricky challenge for any manager, striking that right balance. And I thought Neil was doing it pretty well. It's a hell of a demanding job for someone.
Well, where they go now, Adrian, is what I was going to ask you. And I'm looking at the odds, and Mark Robbins is the overwhelming favourite, which I think is maybe slightly surprising. I'm not sure if that's the most natural fit. You've also got Matt Bloomfield, who gets linked with every championship job, doesn't he? Ryan Lowe and Steve Cooper and Steve Schumacher both out of work. Some people even touting a return for Gary Rowett. What do you think they'll do, and what would you do if you were making the decision?
I've got no idea. I don't see any of the favourites going there. I just don't see it as a fit. Mark Robbins, I don't see it myself. I think he's going to wait, have a little bit longer out.
16-1 for Jose Mourinho. He did say that on Sky, yeah, I've only got across the bridge from my house to get there.
I saw that, yeah. I don't see that. But yeah, I think Mark Robbins might hang on for a Midlands-based job at some point. I think he lives in Derby. You know, that could become vacant at some point in the not-too-distant future. Derby fans not particularly happy with Paul Warne. I mean, a lot of them are northern based, and I know that shouldn't really come into it, but I do feel that it's almost like a specialist job, Millwall. Maybe the one that stands out is Andy Woodman, who's at Bromley, who's sort of worked really well in that area. He's sort of honest as you come. There's no ego to him. He might be someone that suits it. I don't know, but I'm really gutted, really, for Neil Harris that it's sort of ended so abruptly. He's done a great job. I was looking at their last 12 games, though. They haven't lost very many, but a maximum of 2 goals in each of their last 12 games. It's just a series of,
and that's not just for them, is it? That's in the game. Yeah, it's like binary code, isn't it? 1-0, 0-0, 1-1.
Yeah, we'll see, but. Yeah, I like Neil Harris, but I don't know. The world has changed. You can't call your own fans thickos, I guess. I mean, do we think that's prompted it? Do you think that's a part of the reason why he's gone here?
To me, it feels like, and I think we'll talk about this when we get onto Northampton and John Brady, that it's just had enough. And I think there probably comes a point for people these days when they say, well, do I really need this? You'd assume that he probably is desperate for the money. So why not just put yourself and your health before Millwall or Northampton or whoever the football club is? And you've got to give people credit for that, I think. It's better to do that than to work yourself into an early grave. So we'll see where he pops up. I'm sure he'll be back there at some point. He is, of course, the Darren Ferguson of the South. So good luck to Neil Harris and to Millwall with whatever comes next. Hopefully he has a decent time in his final game at Middlesbrough this weekend. All right, we'll have a brief look back at something that happened midweek next. Some things that happened midweek next, even. Adrian, what caught your eye across the Championship this Tuesday, Wednesday?
A few things. Luton, big win for Luton Town. They've been really poor in the draw against Swansea at Kenilworth Road. Outplayed, really. And they needed to dig deep here, and they did. They got a late winner at home to Stoke City. Elijah Adebayo's had a tough old season, came up trumps. But yeah, it was an important night. Rob Edwards down to the bare bones again at the back. He used Tahit Chong as a right wing back. You know, Victor Moses with the other side. And actually, it was a better performance. I think the midfield were good. Kraus and Clark. And yeah, they just about shaded a tight game with Stoke, who are now winless in six. So that was a big win for them. I'd pick out Blackburn Rovers winning at Hillsborough as well. 5 straight wins now for Blackburn. I saw them at Borough. I mean, they're just a good team. They don't really have a striker. You know, Ahashi is a good player, but I see him as more of a number 10, not, offering much of a platform up there. But they work together to get up the field. They work together when they're behind the ball, and they're very, very well organised. And it was nice to see Maktar Gay, the sort of hard-working, non-scoring centre-forward for Blackburn Rovers, finally get his first goal off the bench. Got the winner from a good cross into the box to win that game at Hillsborough. So yeah, they are absolutely flying, Blackburn. I still can't see them staying in the playoffs, but maybe they can, you know, on a wide open championship season. Maybe they can. I think if they invest in January and get themselves a goal scorer from somewhere on loan, potentially, they really could. They really could mount a challenge for promotion, because their off the ball work is absolutely superb. I like this analogy from Todd Cantwell. I don't know if you saw it. He said he's really happy and the group has got great spirit and we're all together. He said, I've touched on happiness. He said, if you're happy in your workplace as a footballer or a hairdresser, it doesn't really matter. You show the best version of yourself. And I just thought, of all the occupations that have come into his head there, I'm not sure why he's gone down the hairdresser route. But he's,
well, look at his bar. I mean, it takes a lot of work, right? I can totally see why that's the first thing that he's thinking of.
So yeah, fair play to him. But yeah, he's full of praise for Eustace. So yeah, Blackburn Rovers, brilliant. And of course, Leeds. I saw Leeds against Derby at the weekend. Easiest home win ever. Derby, non-triers. Literally, went there to not lose by 3 or 4 or 5. It was all about, you know, getting beat narrowly. Didn't really even try and score, Derby. So easy for Leeds. And they've backed it up with a really good 3-1 win against an excellent Borough team. Daniel James, excellent in this game, as he was against Derby. Couple of really good assists and a goal as well from him. So well played, Leeds. The one who caught my eye on the weekend was Joe Rothwell with Tanaka in midfield. I think that unit has done really, really well in the absence of some, you know, high-profile absentees. So yeah, good week for Leeds.
All right, like any good wide man, you've set me up for a tap in there, but I'm not going to keep riffing on Derby County's pain instead. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to move it on. Sam, wins for the top two, Sheffield United and Leeds. Burnley dropping points, but West Brom, like Blackburn, we mentioned them last week about the fact they never score and they don't win enough. Well, they put both of those things right on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think, yeah, important to nod to the top two who just continue motoring on. But yeah, I thought the West Brom result was a standout, given that they've, you know, been struggling to win games, been struggling to score goals. Good to see Fellows back in the groove early part of this game, that's for sure. And they're going to win so many games by a narrow margin. They're going to draw a hell of a lot of games. We've seen that. And defensively, they're going to be incredibly sound. So are they going to be able to get by having that clinical nature that they showed sparingly so far this season? We will see. But I thought this was, you know, pretty convincing in terms of the finishing in this game. I think that wonderful stat that I rolled out last week still stands, just the 5 goal scorers, because I think Moa and Grant were on my list last week. So they haven't got a huge array of goal scorers. But I think, given that Coventry arguably had the better chances in this game, this will be a really satisfying result for Carlos Corberan, and one that he hoped that he can kick on for. There was one in the second half, I think, when Radoni was poised from a delivery from the right-hand side, just to probably put it into almost an unguarded net, and Torp arrived from nowhere and took it off his toe. So I think Frank Lampard will be really disappointed this morning. He hasn't got anything, but I think for West Brom, that's a bit of a statement win after a difficult period without victories. And the other game that caught my eye a little bit, albeit it was a 1-1, just Hull, I think, showed, you know, even after only a few days on the training ground with Ruben Sellers, much improved that performance, arguably their best performance of the season. And Watford continually just so bad away from home. I mean, they got out of absolute jail here to get a point. Not a brilliant goal defensively for Hull to concede, but really important for them to get a draw and get up and running under the new manager. So yeah, positives for them, still negatives for the Hornets away from home. They really need to light up Plymouth Argyle, find a formula to be more competitive away from home.
Yeah, I mean, Hull City's admin is all in on Ruben Sellers. I'm sure that is a club decision, but goodness me, if you go through their feed on X, I particularly enjoyed the mid-match shot of him on the sideline, simply tagged, giving instructions, praise emoji, as if that was some sort of revelation.
Important in that role.
Quite, yeah. Some players might even have been listening to him, who knows? All right, that was midweek. Let's have a look at some of the weekend games next. And we'll start at Ashton Gate. I haven't had much time on my hands this week, but I did troll through the list. And by my reckoning, Clarkey, is the only stadium in the Football League with Gate in the name. So, yeah, QPR hoping it'll swing in their favour this weekend. You saw the Robins, though, Adrian, midweek. Frustration for them at the Stadium of Light.
Oh, heartbreak. Yeah, because it was a great team display against a sort of underwhelming Sunderland. We'll get to them a little bit later. But yeah, they responded because they've been terrible at Portsmouth at the weekend, beaten 3-0, hadn't really done anything that pleased the manager, got caught in possession inside their own half, a couple of goals playing out from the back. And yeah, so they probably were dreading the game, or the fans were dreading the visit to Sunderland. But whew, it's a good team display. It really was. They had to ride the storm in the first half. But the second half, Liam Manning changed the system, and it was a really, really smart move. And I wonder whether he'll continue with that against Queen's Park Rangers. He went to a back three to get them up the pitch, sort of risked it, went 3v3 at the back to get someone higher up the pitch to go and press Sunderland and to play in higher areas. And it worked like a dream. They were 20, 25 yards higher second half, Bristol City, and caused loads of problems. So yeah, it makes me wonder whether they'll go with a back three for the game at home to Queen's Park Rangers. It probably would suit the centre backs, who were really, really impressive. Luke McNally in particular really caught my eye at the Stadium of Light. So so they're nice and solid, and then they've got, you know, they've got a match winner in Anis Mometi. He didn't have his best night the other night. Should really have scored the winner. But he is playing very well. He's the top scorer for Bristol City this season. He's got 6 goals. I would expect Naki Wells to come in for Sinclair Armstrong, even though obviously the story would be Sinclair Armstrong playing in this game against the club that sold him. So I think Naki Wells has just got a bit more nous, a little bit more craft. He knows the game of being a striker more than Sinclair Armstrong. He's still very raw, we know that. So yeah, that would be an interesting team selection. But yeah, I'd expect, based on what I saw, I'd expect Bristol City to potentially beat an informed QPR in quite a low scoring game, you know, because they're very, very solid against the bottom half. Bristol City, they've been solid this season. They've won 4, drawn 4, and lost just the 2. So this is the kind of match Bristol City usually get a decent result in.
Only one goal in the 2 games between the sides last season. Sam, what the hell is going on with Queen's Park Rangers? This is absolutely astonishing.
They were terrible before. What's going on?
One again.
You need to tell Matt that, do you? He wanted him sacked a month ago, didn't he?
Probably
just
what motivated
wash over
him.
That, are we?
Yeah, fine. No, listen, I'm pleased for him. He's a listener to the pod, and he's taken on board my criticisms. And all of a sudden, they've won 3 from 4 and kept 4 straight clean sheets. You must be over the moon.
Yeah, I don't think I can give you a detailed critique of what he's been doing on the training ground, because, you know, certainly in terms of personnel, not a great deal has changed. I think Field was missing maybe for a game or two. I think Varane's really come to the fore in the middle of the pitch. The back four, bizarrely, because that's the real strength at the moment, is quite patched up. You've got Harrison Ashby playing at fullback. You've got Liam Morrison getting a bit of a run in the side, who was excellent last night against Oxford. Steve Cook is and has been pretty colossal since he came to the club. But a lot of the absentees still remain, like Kenneth Powell, Dembele, who had a really good start to the season, Colback, Jake Clark-Salter. That's a duo that I've referred to quite frequently on the podcast this season, that the statistics hugely back it up. When those two are available, QPR are a much better team. So the team is still on paper, looks really thin bare, and the substitutes as well. Coley came in at the weekend due to an injury to Salah and got himself a couple of goals and was really important again last night for the first goal against Oxford. A real important header to knock it down for Field to get the first one, and the second one was an expertly taken finish from a midfielder joining in with an attack. And I was there back in the last season when he got 2 really important goals. Sam Field, I think it was in that Leeds game when they were incredibly convincing towards the tail end of last year. So he's a big player for them. But yeah, the turnaround, I think, is probably due to a few players returning, the new players getting used to playing in the Championship, and I think probably just a good coach and a good manager who's been backed pretty much, you know, by the supporters and by the board. There's been a little bit of criticism, probably more online rather than in the stadium. That recent game I went to, they kind of 4-1 home humbling against Middlesbrough, his name was still getting sung. So I think he's got so much goodwill towards him from last season that it remains, even in the aftermath of a pretty horrendous start to the season. And the goalkeeper's great. And I think we've said that quite often. So a good goalkeeper, solid foundation. Not brilliant going the other way as of yet, but he's probably recognised that, Marty Sifuentes, and I would expect them to go to Bristol City and be pretty tight again. I don't think there'll be many goals in the game. Hopefully, for my sake, one or two will go in at the right end.
We shall see. In South Wales, Swansea City will oblige Sunderland to travel an awful long way for the right to play them. 10 points between them ahead of kickoff. So who's going to win and why? Sam, you're a Luke Williams truther. Tell me something about the Swans.
Well, I really fancied them here, and I could get you the audio and show you that I actually predicted Swansea to win at Plymouth Argyle by 2-1. There you go. I don't know why. Well, you can make that noise, Clarkie, but there's about a 9-point gap as to why you would be a little bit silly doing so. A little bit like what I was saying about QPR, they are a brilliant watch, Swansea, if you like total football and the patterns and possession and what have you. But there is
boring.
A little bit of a lack of thrust there. That was definitely my takeaway when I saw them recently at Derby. They do obviously have loads of the characteristics of Swansea teams under previous managers and previous guys, is Brendan Rodgers and Martinez, Russell Martin. So Luke Williams is a brilliant fit. But I think still, like QPR, there's a bit of a lack of forward impetus, a bit of a lack of forward threat. And that's something I'm sure that Luke will be speaking to the owners about remedying in the January window. Cullen's actually playing as a 10 now. I don't know if you've seen that, but he did it for Wales when he scored. Made a goal beautifully at Derby and gets a fantastic goal at Argyle. I don't know if you've seen it, but the social media team, or I saw it on X, it's about a 20 pass move, you know, built from the back. You know, it's not cut and thrust straight away. It's built kind of meticulously through the midfield, you know, change the direction of attack from one flank to another. It's a very much a Swansea goal. So I think in Luke Williams, you have that essence of what Swansea want to be about. But within that, I think Pipotnik, Bianchini, they haven't really found the answer, probably in the front positions. Ronald, a little bit hit and miss on the right-hand side. Miles Harris, who he came for at Chelsea, now on loan from Brentford, I think, is a wide player. He's playing wide at the moment, who tucks in. He's a bit more intricate. So they're going for that kind of balance, having a flyer on one side and a bit more of a footballer tucking in on the other flank. But yeah, if they have limitations in attack, defensively brilliant, and Vigouroux distribution, and probably what he's done in terms of shot stopping this season has been top notch. So him, a brilliant back four, where Timon and Key are fundamental to the way that they like to play, tucking into midfield. They're getting loads of plaudits. And nice one for Josh Key and a nice one for Matt Grimes, winning at Argyle in the week with my Grecian hat on. So it's a big game for them. I'm sure they got a little bit of stick, but they can look ahead to the weekend, I think, with confidence. And they'd be one of the teams, if they could get it right in January, who knows? You know, because there's a lot to like about them. It's just those front areas. So they'd be a dark horse for me. You know, it would take something, but I think there's the makings of a Swansea side that could have that push for the playoffs. Maybe not this, but certainly next year.
On Vigouroux, very quickly, he's prevented 6 extra goals, according to Opta, which is the most of any Championship keeper. So he's done some great work with his hands as well as his feet.
What about Sunderland then, Adrian? I noticed that the roof collapsed in the press room after the game against Bristol City, or a section of it at least. Is it caving in on their promotion bid too, at least automatically?
No, I wouldn't say that. They've still got a chance. They look like a playoff team to me, Sunderland. In this match that I saw against Bristol City, they started the game with a real swagger, and the way they were moving the ball around, the triangles, the incessant wave after wave of attack. They look like a proper team that really control matches and can take opponents apart. But then it fell away a little bit, and it turned into a really frustrating night for them. Only 1 win in 8 now, like, you know, way too many draws. So yeah, so I got a glimpse of their capabilities. They missed Tom Watson. I don't know if you've seen this boy. He's only 18, scored a brace at the weekend against Stoke, and in the first 20 minutes of the game, everything went down the left to him and Elise, who was really good at left back. And it was a real shame he got injured. He came off injured, and hopefully he's not out for too long. But he's someone to keep your eye on, Tom Watson, or Tommy Watson, as they call him. Basically, he's Jack Clark. He just looks like Jack Clark just a few years ago. Very similar in as a style of play as well. So he's one to keep your eye on. But in this game, yeah, the midfield will have to play better. They were a little bit off it. Dan Neal and Rigg really didn't have a great game. Joe Bellingham is a quality player, but he takes a lot of touches. Too many touches, in my opinion. He's just got to sharpen up his game a little bit, but he's got great balance and it's hard to knock off the ball. Yeah, it'll be a good footballing match, this. It might suit Sunderland as well to, you know, have a game that's not necessarily physical and robust. They'll both try and out-football one another. And you could probably say the same about Sunderland in terms of up front. Isidore didn't really get much of a sniff. I know he's done all right this season, but yeah, don't know how good he is. He's probably better than anything Swansea have got, but their main threat really is in the wide area, Sunderland. They just funnel it wide to to Watson or Patrick Roberts or Mayenda, who had a really good game. He's only a teenager as well, Mayenda. He played on the right and then he moved to the left. Real live wire. It was just a matter of the other night of a slight lack of quality, decision making in and around the box. But they've got really good players. They're well coached. This should be a nice match to watch. Don't know if it'll be that entertaining because they can both be a little bit sterile, particularly Swansea, but let's see.
Yeah, looking forward to both. All right, we'll take a trip into League One next. Peterborough versus Crawley, one of the third tier tussles we're talking. Posh, either 10 points off the playoffs or only 2 points ahead of Crawley, who occupy the final relegation place, depending on your mood. Another team you've seen recently, Adrian, Peterborough, 3 defeats in a row in the league for them. They don't often lose 4 on the bounce, so Crawley might have to beware here.
Yeah, they're at home. They recently battered Blackpool, they battered Cambridge. When they turn it on, Peterborough at London Road, and play on the front foot, they can score goals for fun, can't they? I was looking at the numbers, actually. They've scored 33. That is more than Wrexham, and it's more than Birmingham. Yet, you know, they've conceded 32. And there's only one team that's letting more than 32, and that's Shrewsbury, who are bottom. So that tells you the issue. There's not really too much wrong with their attacking play. I like Randall, played well the other night. Kean Hayes, he's in for Kwame Poko. I don't know if you saw this, guys, but Kwame Poko, clearly their best player, Peterborough United, he's out for 3 months. I think he's done his hamstring, he's got to have an operation. So a lot rests on Kean Hayes coming in and doing the business. Mothersill was really good the other night. Ricky J. Jones is so fast, just ridiculous. I mean, he could be a sprinter, really. But he produced one of the misses of the season against Northampton, an absolute open goal that he skied. So he'll be determined to make up for that in this game. I would fancy them to probably outscore Crawley. But you can't... The defence is a problem. It's an absolute problem. They obviously lost key defenders, didn't they? Ronnie Edwards and others went in the summer. Harrison Burrows, the left back, of course. And the back four is so fragile. They've got virtually no experience. You've got Fernandez as a kid, Katongo on loan as a kid, Dornelly, a kid. You know, they desperately need two new defenders at least in January. If they don't get them, Peterborough might look over their shoulders because they're going to concede a lot of goals. They need to, and they haven't got a good goalie. Bila Kapic is not great. So for me, the jury's out on Peterborough. They won't go up this season, no chance, but they could slip into trouble if they don't sort their defence out in January, in my opinion. So yeah, they've got to invest. They probably have enough up front to win this game, but yeah, you can't trust them at the back.
All right, big shout. What about Crawley, Sam? Probably a bit disappointed that their game against Stevenage was postponed, given that they're unbeaten in 5 and won the last 2. You want to keep building on that momentum, presumably.
Yeah, and there's quite a lot of similarities between them and Carlisle, who we'll come on to, and it just shows what a difficult job that Rob Elliott in the case of Crawley has walked into, because they had such a horrendous start to the season. Carlisle likewise, who are the bottom of the EFL at the moment, but Crawley have lost 1 game in 7 and they're keeping clean sheets, 3 in the last 5. So defensively, excellent. I think in terms of statistics, they're not a brilliant attacking side. I think, you know, Scott Lindsay really had them going in that regard towards the tail end of last season, helped no end by having one of the best strikers in Orsi in the division, who's continued to do reasonably well in front of goal since he's joined Burton. A few things kind of caught the eye. Obviously, defensively, really good. 4 clean sheets in 7, like I said, 1 in the first 11 games. So really good in that department. It's the recruitment still. This kind of passed me by, but Shawmney, who got the goal at Charlton recently, he was a young lad who went off to do his college football scholarship in the States and was there since 2018. Had a little bit of his look at his record. Not someone by Wikipedia's standards, scored bundles of goals in America, but he's come back and he scored that beautiful goal at the Valley. So he looks like a talent down the middle. They're playing with a front two now and a midfield three. Josh Kelly, who was a wide player in that successful playoff team last year, is playing in central midfield and looks like he's playing quite deep in there as well, with maybe 2 8s supporting him. So he's showing his versatility, but that's a change in the setup. Nothing's changed in terms of the plan. It'll be a really good football match, this, because Crawley still want to play exactly the same way as they did previously, albeit with a few of Rob Elliott's ideas sprinkled in there. But given that he was at Gateshead with Mike Williamson, where they played lovely football, it was a really good fit for Crawley. So, yeah, they're playing with a front two. Shawmney's in there. And part of the back three is a chap called Benjamin Tanimu, who's a Nigerian international, who they signed outside of the window, I think, from Tanzania. He's playing right centre back. So, just again, just incredibly diverse recruitment.
They've got scouts everywhere.
Yeah.
Even in Tanzania.
And like we gave him loads of stick, didn't we, initially, when this project, I think we can call this a project, kind of kicked off a few years ago. But there's a lot to like about it. Obviously, the promotion was amazing. And then to rip up that whole side and try and go again seemed really problematic and like it was only going to end one way. But he has given them an opportunity. And I saw him speaking last week, and he's got Anthony Sweeney with him, who was a kind of lower league midfield player who I used to play against at Hartlepool, if memory serves me right. The other assistant who he took from Gateshead is a lad called Louis Story. And I didn't realise this. He's 31. He was playing for Gateshead every week in the centre of defence. And in Rob Elliott's words, one of the best defenders in the National League. So he's given that up to come down and be a coach in League One, still joins in every day. So, I mean, I don't know how I feel about that. I mean,
you've got to register him, surely, as a player.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I mean, there can't be too much of a... He can't have been that good, can he? If he can't get in the, if he can't get in the Crawley 18, if Mark Wright got a game. But, I just thought it was quite interesting. But
yeah.
I mean, a lot of the similarities, obviously, running through the plan, you know, second for possession, they're just not very potent in an attacking sense. And you know, that's probably down to a lot of these guys being kind of curveballs coming into the professional game in England. That probably take a little bit of time to acclimatise.
Why scout coming to the fore for Crawley? No doubt about it. They're not sending people to Tanzania in the States, are they? They've signed them guys off video. Must have done. Unless they got, they might have had them on trial, I guess. Which is fine.
White scout's expensive, but it's cheaper than a return ticket to Tanzania, just about, I think. Elsewhere in League One, two teams who aren't having the best of seasons looking to remedy that in Yorkshire. Rotherham taking on Northampton. Rotherham's game against Blackpool postponed last week. They're only a place and a point above the relegation zone. They're rubbish away from home, Sam, but they tend to get it done at the New York. They've won 3 of their last 4 home games in the league. But even so, this ain't where we expected them to be on their return to League One, not by a long way.
No, it's a real head scratcher. I think looking at the 11 that took to the field against Lincoln, there's not loads of differences. When I saw them, obviously, in that derby at Barnsley, they were so far off it. And obviously, I was about 10 foot from the chairman. I was about 5 foot from Paul Rayner, the assistant, and about 100 foot from some very disappointed away supporters. So I thought it was quite a good gauge of what the mood was. And it was on the brink. I think probably given Steve Evans's experience and his track record, that probably really works in his favour here. I think if it was a less established manager, they may very well have changed already. But I think it's going to take probably the season, maybe one or two windows, just to move things around. Despite him doing a lot of business in the summer, I think he's probably going to have to build a little bit more than he has done in terms of his squad. But seeing Raggett playing here, scoring, he's not been readily available, I don't think, for the whole of the season. And then you had Wilkes and Clark Harris out previously. This has given him the opportunity now to get his best players on the pitch. Powell put in a brilliant delivery. He's continually done that. I think he's 4 assists for the season. So his left foot is still a huge asset for them. And I think in a season where they've not really hit the heights, he's been one of the signings that's kind of stood out. But yeah, that front three, I think that haven't really been in unison for maybe a month, maybe 6 weeks. Nombe having to play wide to accommodate Clark Harris, and obviously Wilkes is another wide player. I think they can be optimistic. I'm saying it a little bit reluctantly, but I think surely their fortunes are going to have to change now with that amount of firepower. And as you say, I think at home, they'll be strong defensively. They just need to find a way away from home to improve. But they are one of the biggest surprises of the season. And absolutely, he will come under fire from the supporters, maybe not from the chairman, but the supporters won't be particularly enamoured if this is going to be a season that finishes in the bottom half, to say the least.
Well, as for Northampton, the big story, Adrian, which we haven't touched on since our last show, is the fact that John Brady is no longer the manager. It was 200 games and out for him. Chairman Kelvin Thomas said, "We also fully understand the real pressures that come with being a manager. And while we would have preferred things to be different, we understand John's decision." Just sounds like, as we were talking with Neil Harris, this is a stressful job. He's decided the best thing for his health is to not do it.
Yep, looking after his mental health, and you can't, you know, have a go at anyone for doing that, can you? There's not much wrong at Northampton. They're fine. They're competitive. They can make life difficult for any team, I think, in the division. They're certainly not a team in crisis. I actually think they've got a decent chance of staying up, maybe getting up towards the lower end of mid-table, Northampton. But yeah, he did a great job. I think he probably deserves sort of club legend status, really, for what he achieved at Northampton. Very likable guy as well. So yeah, we wish him the best of luck. And yeah, after a break, hopefully he'll come back in, because he's clearly a very good coach. So yeah, they got a great win, didn't they, against Peterborough? I was there for that. I mean, it was, maybe you ever worked there, but the press box is seriously cramped. My knees were absolutely in bits. I had to stand up for the game. But yeah, no, it was they played more football than I expected. They're capable of knocking it through the third. Looked a little bit shaky playing out from the back, but the two centre halves are very good. It was a wing back system in the end in this game, but John Guthrie was really good. Aaron McGowan as well alongside him, excellent. Loads of blocks. Very honest group of players. Really determined, and they fought like lions, really, for Ian Sampson, who's a club legend, that's the interim manager. So yeah, it was they'll have probably Pinnock at wing back. Hoskins was up front the other day. They've got some decent players, Northampton. And that they won't roll over for Rotherham, no chance. So I think this will be a scrappy game. I don't think it'll be that much amazing football. But yeah, Northampton have got a chance of going there and nicking something for sure. They're solid without sort of having too much flair, Northampton Town. Who's going to get the job? Well, I floated Andy Woodman's name. He's favourite, the Bromley guy. Robbie Savage is second favourite. Obviously doing a good job at Macclesfield at the moment. Then it comes Sampson. And then it's the Tamworth boss, Andy Peake. So an interesting collection of gaffers there in the mix for this gig.
Yeah, get the Tamworth boss. Let's have Tommy Tonks in the EFL to follow him, please. In League Two, the bottom side, Carlisle, going for just a fourth league win of the season when they welcome Chesterfield, who are on the fringes of the playoffs, to Brunton Park. Two divisions between the sides last season. Could it be the same again next term, I wonder? What's happened to this glorious new era for Carlisle, Sam? Mike Williamson struggling?
Yeah, he is. And I suppose it feels like I've had teams of very much similar ilk throughout the divisions here. But, you know, this is quite a unique way to approach League Two football, kind of maybe MK Dons and Crawley Town aside. They're the two that spring to mind, how they approach trying to get out of that division last year and in previous seasons. But Carlisle are obviously going to be trying to dominate the ball, and it's going to be very different for the supporters to what they were witnessing under Paul Simpson, albeit it was very successful. But it's a big culture change, I think, for the players, and he's inheriting these lads that are probably playing in League Two for a reason, that they don't have to be too reliant on their technical skills and playing little pretty patterns in their own defensive third. Well, that will be the case under Mike Williamson. So there'll be a huge acclimatisation going on, I would suggest. But I think the bottom line is they've been heavily investing, I think, in the last few windows. The managers, Paul Simpson in January and in the summer, backed whether these players are going to be good enough or the type of players that Mike Williamson wants. Time will tell, but I think it's far too good a squad to be at the foot of the EFL. And it is changing hands. We were talking about Swindon being in that position last week. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about Carlisle. And the fact that they've not lost since the 26th of October gives you the story. You know, they're becoming harder to beat. They're not creating an abundance, they're not scoring an abundance. But I think structurally, they're looking better. Still haven't won under Williamson at Brunton Park. Not won there since the end of August, I believe. So he'll want to get that sorted out as quickly as possible. But I looked at the team and I looked at the bench of quite a few unknowns. There's a few low knees in the starting 11 from last time out. But players like McGeoch, Biggins, Jordan Jones, Kelly, who was at Rotherham and scored that important goal that got them promoted under Warne a few seasons ago. They've got some players, Mellish to come back in as well, at the left of the back three. They've got some good players in the squad, and when everyone's back fully fit, I would anticipate them starting to climb the table. But this will be a tough game. Chesterfield are a really good outfit. They want to play quick, direct football in terms of playing with pace. Wide players should be quite a nice contrast. And like I said, you know, Mike Williamson will be desperate to get the fans fully on board, who I think are probably more focused on what's going to happen in the window and the new ownership and probably previous mistakes that have possibly been made. I think on reflection, they may be just stuck with Paul Simpson. As much as I respect him and the job he did, outstanding under a couple of spells, yeah, they probably just stuck a little bit too long last year when they were clearly in a little bit of free fall.
Well, this might be a good chance for them, Adrian, because as we expected, Chesterfield competitive in League Two, but they're a bit inconsistent as well.
Yeah, they win one, they lose one. That's kind of the story. Even their away form, they've won 4 of 9 away games, Chesterfield, but they've also lost 4. So, yeah, there's a chance here for Carlisle. And Chesterfield have been ravaged by injuries. There's a lot of key players missing at the moment. So might be a decent time to play them. That said, they did win 3-0 against Tranmere last time out in the league. And that was a really good, dominant, absolutely dominant performance from Chesterfield. Yeah, look, they look after the ball well. Only Notts County have a higher share of percentage possession than Chesterfield, who can also they carry a threat from set pieces. I think they've scored 10 from set plays. You know, they're a good rounded team. They're attack minded. They'll go there to try and win the game, Chesterfield. But you know that they, if they're off it, as Sam says, this might be one where Carlisle can nick it. One stat that does stand out to me when I look at Chesterfield is maybe they've scored more goals than they should have done. According to the sort of XG side of it, they've scored 8 more goals than expected. So their finishing has been absolutely outstanding. Is that sustainable over this long, hard winter? We'll have to wait and see. I'll give Carlisle a shot at this one.
All right. Sounds like an interesting game in prospect. Nearly done for today, but of course we're going to do our predictions. Now, last week wasn't a great week for any of us, frankly. I've got it that I got 1 point and nobody else got anything. Pompey, Bristol City. I said Pompey would win 1-0. They won 3-0. Neither of you two backed that. And we got every other game. Well, we got Lincoln v Charlton wrong. In fairness to us, none of us picked that Barrow v MK Dons would be postponed, which, I mean, I guess we probably could have got 10 points for that, couldn't we? But
still. Yeah, that's the reason. Well, so the score, Matt 18, me 28, Sam 36. We need to concertina it. We need to tighten up this race for the golden, don't know what it is, that's golden, that we're going to win at the end of the season.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm closing the gap. You've had your warning, just a shot across the bows last week. For you each. Coventry Hull, what's going to happen, Adrian?
1-0. Yeah, Ruben Selles, good tactician, new manager bounce, up against another new gaffer, Frank Lampard. Not really got his teeth into the team yet. Good win at Millwall, not so good in midweek. So yeah, 1-1.
2-2 for me. What about you, Sam?
Like really encouraging Hull performance. Loads of plaudits again, but lose to a late goal. Plucky hole. 1-0.
1-0. Okay, going for the home W there. I'll let you have first crack at our League One pick then, Sam. It's Bolton against Wigan in the battle for Lancashire supremacy.
Ooh, I didn't love Wigan. I did not love Wigan. I'm not seeing Bolton for a while. I'm going to go for the home win. I'm going to make it tight for the geographical sense here. 2-1, Bolton.
Okay, goals in that one. What do you reckon, Adrian?
1-0, Bolton.
1-0, not so many goals. Okay. Well, I tell you what, you know, I need to start closing the cap on you two, so it's not really going to be in my favour to do the same, is it? I'll say that this is going to be, sod it, another 2-2 draw. Why not? Live a little. It's nearly Christmas. I'll have the first dibs on our League Two game, which is Salford against Notts County. Tricky one to predict this. Notts County struggling a little bit late, but they always get goals, don't they? I reckon they get back on the horse here in style with a 1-3 away victory. How about you, Adrian?
I had the exact same scoreline written down here. So I'll tweak it. I'll go Salford 1, Notts County 2.
Okay. Sam?
You make this so easy for me. Stinks of it. 1-1.
All right, and nobody's happy. We shall see how we get on with those next week. Let me remind you before we disappear that our partners Quinbet have a new offer. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet worth up to £35, a minimum of 3 bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus. New UK customers only. Gambleaware.org is the place to go for your responsible gambling tips. You can find us on social media at EFL What The on X, What The EFL elsewhere. Leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. Helps us grow the show. Final thing before we go is, of course, Tweet of the Week. I've changed this last minute on the boys to go for one that came from West Bromwich Albion's account after their win on Wednesday night. This is from the official club account. It's got a picture of the scoreline and Carlin Grant celebrating. And it says, 3 points against Frank Lampard's Coventry City. Stars in your eyes emoji. It's definitely a dig, right, Clarkey?
Yeah, well, no, not a dig. No, I don't think it's a dig. I think it is... Because everywhere you go, if it's the TV, the radio, online, you can't now say Coventry City on its own. You can't say it.
It was the same with Derby County, wasn't it?
Yeah, you have to say Frank Lampard's Coventry City. And I think that they're just taking the piss, basically, which I guess you can, it will go down well with our home fans, won't it, after you just beat them 2-0 in a bit of a Midlands derby. So, yeah, not a dig, more of a piss take.
All right, so it's more...
Can I come in and just say a load of stuff and not make any sense? Everyone knows that it's irritating to do this, right? Yeah, to call it Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa, Frank Lampard's club. Everyone knows it's irritating, right? And a lot of people kind of say it in an ironic way. Mm. Yeah, agreed?
Yeah,
oh, Frank Lampard's club, right? But yet some people, and I'm not in the habit of naming names, have been doing it genuinely in the last few days. So everyone knows it's wrong, yet some people, why are people still doing it?
Come on, name a name.
No, I just heard it a few times in the, and like, yeah, it's just bizarre because it's like a total no-no now for this reason that it really annoys the opposition supporters and the opposition teams, yet people still do it. It's a weird thing.
Well, I think it was a dig anyway.
Oh, it's a dig.
Why are they digging out poor old Frank for? He's only just got there.
No, it's not his fault, is it? It's just, I don't know. It's just basically having a go. Oh, you've got your big glossy new management
That's
team.
It, yeah, you're right.
Send that up at our place. Get back on the bus with 0 points.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. We're back with another show, our final show before Christmas next week. And it's the 100th episode spectacular as well. So who knows what will happen when we meet again in 7 days'
time.
Just
get smashed. Yeah.
Maybe. TBC. We shall see. All right, thanks for joining us today. Back with you again next week. Bye for now.